And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to Yes, We're Alive edition, considering we promised to do something about the Quick Lane Bowl, and yet here we are 3 weeks later between portal stuff and recruiting stuff and coaching staff changes. It's been a long couple of months, Luke. I feel like during the season, it's a grind, but once it turns the page from that final game, which is obviously the Gopher Badger game, all the way through, I would say probably January 10th, it's just a constant fear of, am I going to miss something between the portal, a phone call, a text, whatever it may be. It's something, man.
I have to ask, do you do this all? I know you have an incredible memory, but do you do this all basically by memory, or do you have a note-taking system?
In terms of what?
You know, like, if you're like me, you might use, you know, some sort of note application. Some people use Evernote. I work in product development. I use Jira a lot, and love it or hate it, and it works. But, you know, just a tool to help you remember, well, I got to do this task, or this is the scope of this, or do you just take notes, or is it literally just in your memory bank? Because I know you come to these things, and you're just pulling from memory mostly.
Yeah, this is solely from memory. I should probably get better at taking notes, whether it's paper or Google Docs. But yeah, we have a lot to get to. Right. I've seen your tweets. I've seen everything. I've seen your emails. I've seen your Gopher Illustrated members. I love you all dearly. But it's been a few weeks to try and get Luke and I on the same page. But luckily, Luke, we found some time here today.
You know, people might be remiss to know that Ryan James and I actually got on the same page before you and I got on the same page here in 2024. So,
well, considering you and I have done about 50 episodes in the last, I don't know, 12 months, considering, I don't know when the last time was you were able to get Ryan James.
But he and yeah, I.
And what is your Gopher basketball podcast, Luke, for those people who are into Gopher hoops?
Yeah, so we do a podcast. Ryan James and I have done a podcast forever called Talk Gopher Buckets. You know, it's a lot of fun. It literally is just he and I get on the phone and we just start talking. We literally have no notes. We've never had notes, and we just talk. We actually did something on our Twitter, Ryan, as well, where we talked to, you know, just got on a live after the Nebraska win and chatted, and that was fun. He and I probably talk and text more than most people know, but we just can never seem to get on the same page to be able to record again. And we found a window, we did it. He was driving a long time, and we did it. And it's fun to talk. It's fun to talk hoops with him. And you know, you and I have also found a way to find some structure and record more frequently. Hopefully, Ryan and I can get there as well.
Yeah, one day you two will, especially as now Gopher basketball, which is your first love. I mean, you're the one at every game. Don't you have season tickets?
I have season tickets. I've been I am Gopher basketball has always been number one for me. That's how I fell in love first with Gopher sports, no doubt. And then Gopher football obviously is a very close second for me. But yeah, basketball has always been my first love. I can remember fondly to the season that wasn't the 97 Final Four season. Went to a couple games with my dad, and I don't know, it was even before that I was hooked. I've been hooked for a long time. Win, lose, or draw, man, I'm in for it.
Well, if you, like Luke has mentioned, if you want to hear some Gopher basketball talk, which is even tougher to find in this market on the airwaves for your listening pleasure, and Gopher football talk Gopher buckets. But Luke, do we get to talk about a game now where Minnesota scores 30 points yet only had 26 passing yards?
I think we do have to talk about that. So Cole Kramer got the start for your Gophers. We should probably remind some people. I just love the conspiracy theory that Cole Kramer, and this got like national attention, that he was getting paid like significant money. I call 30K significant money to play in this bowl game. And here he was, 8 for 16, 26 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception. But I just love that conspiracy theory story that came about. But awesome for him that he got a chance to start that game. I don't know if you know this, Ryan, but I actually got a chance to interview him for Dinkytown Athletes. And that's on their like, you know, behind the paywall service as well for members. But man, what a dude. Like, he was so excited to get an opportunity to start, and say what you will, but as a starter, he's 1-0 as a Gopher.
He certainly is. I think my favorite factoid from this Cole Kramer start is this, Luke. I'm going to have you guess. Cole Kramer is the last Minnesota quarterback, a.k.a. in-state quarterback, to start a Power 5 game since who?
Ooh, the guy from Hutchinson. What was his name?
The guy from Hutchinson.
Yeah. No, Adam Weber. No. It's not that.
Hutchinson.
It's not that old. Okay, Adam Weber in-state started a game. I don't think Moses Alapate started a game, did he?
No, the answer you're looking for is Philip Nelson.
Oh, Nelson, sure. Oh, golly. Yeah, for sure.
I believe it had been since that 2012, 2013 season when I think Phil Nelson started some games out at Rutgers, of all places, which started the Minnesota East connection. But that just speaks to peace and love to if there's any in-state quarterbacks that are recruits. The in-state quarterback market here stinks. Absolutely putrid. And good for Cole Kramer to finally break the streak. 8 of 16, to your point, Luke. But an efficient 2 touchdowns and 1 pick on 16 attempts.
Yeah, now, very efficient.
Minnesota tried to throw deep twice in this game. And in both times, Cole Kramer got absolutely smoked. The first one, he beats, I believe the young man's name is Cassius Howell, which... What was your favorite Bowling Green has players in the transfer portal playing in this game moment? Because that was mine. Their best pass rusher in the portal elects to play in this game.
So are you allowed by the rule, are you allowed to do this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so you can pretty much do anything you want. It's like an institution rule whether or not you can play or not.
Correct. Okay. So he showcased his talents in this bowl game, and he's actually now going to be going to Texas A&M, a.k.a. the NIL hotspot of the world. But Minnesota tried to throw deep twice. The first one, it is a wounded duck into the air that is intercepted. The second one, it is a wounded duck as he smoked both the left tackle and the right tackle are beat on both of those attempts. But how about they get into the red zone, Luke? And on third down, they go trips. They find Elijah Spencer on a slant. Mm-hmm. And then they go to a little tight end coming across wide open. Maybe it's a little late to Jameson Gears, but I just don't know that I've ever seen a game where there's been more points than passing yards and that team has won. But Minnesota found a way to do it, Luke.
Yeah, and you know, part of one of the wrinkles that they threw in here, which I thought was actually really clever of them, was to actually run some Wildcat again. I thought that they might run Cole Kramer more, but then they ran Darius Taylor at the Wildcat QB, and that was really effective as you basically got an extra hat. And ultimately I thought that was a really good wrinkle that helped them, especially early, and put it in your best player's hands and let him make the decision.
You mean the guy that everybody on Twitter told me for the last 3 months, Ryan, it doesn't matter. He's going to be in the portal. Minnesota sucks. He's going to go get a bag.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wish I could quote tweet all of your Nimrods.
I love your frustration at the people that just like scream into the ether at you.
I've become a lot better about starting to block people on Twitter. It's because it's the same people just flaming out in my mentions, and maybe I should be better about that.
Can I mention something interesting? The people that usually have the most flaming hot takes seem like the least real fans.
Here's what I'll say. Darius Taylor's really good. Darius Taylor out of the Wildcat was a wrinkle that needed to happen. Yep. And I think an underappreciated part of that was Jordan Newbin was really good as a lead blocker.
Yes.
And I think the offensive line had a pretty good day moving and a MAC defensive line when they needed to. But Darius Taylor, I mean, you saw it in that game. I mean, he's very, very gifted. And that's where the hope would be for the next couple of seasons. You're able to keep Darius Taylor healthy for double-digit games. And if you are, you're going to have 1,000-yard rushing seasons out of that young man. I mean, he's just – I've been trying to still figure out who he reminds me of. I don't know that there's a running back that's donned the Gopher uniform that I've been able to kind of put it together with. I think he's very unique in his skill set. But it was certainly the Darius Taylor game, and he's someone that they rode hard. 35 carries for 208 yards. And it was funny. Afterwards in the press conference, Fleck was talking about how he sees everybody's emails and messages too about Why don't you go to somebody different? You're going to run him into the ground. He's like, we don't have a game for another 9 months. So I talked to Darius. Darius was cool with it. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting, and we'll get into this in the off season, but I got to talk with Darius Taylor ahead of the bowl game for Dinkytown Athletes, and he was able to detail there just kind of his football background, Ryan. And, you know, we saw how good he was as a pass catcher a couple different times, and he wants that to be a broader part of the repertoire for the Gophers. Like, that is something he's very comfortable with, and I'm curious to see, you know, next season, you see that come to fruition.
He's only been a full-time running back for 2 seasons.
Right.
He was a high school receiver until about midway through, I think it was his junior season, where he split time, and then as a senior was the first true year of him getting the bulk of the work at running back. And then obviously this past season, where when he played, he would have been Big Ten running back of the week once again. So we'll get into the transfer portal additions that give me hope that they're just going to ride one guy into the ground in 2024.
Right.
But in this game, it certainly was Darius Taylor. I thought that the offensive line, in terms of in run blocking, they played pretty well. I think Tyler Cooper at either guard spot, as Minnesota was rotating there, I think he played really, really well. I want to highlight that young man from the St. Croix Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do have to talk a little bit about the defense in this specific game. You know, if you looked at this game, it's tough from a defensive perspective because you lose Tyler Newbin, right? Now, you don't lose him, but he wasn't going to play, right? Were there other guys that didn't play? We had a couple injuries as well. I'm trying to.
So recall. You had Cody Lindenberg play, but yes. You were without Devin Williams, Maverick Baranowski, LB2, LB3. You were without both of your strong safeties and Darius Green and Aiden Goosby, who were both in slings on the sideline because they got offseason surgery. Tyler Newbin didn't play in this game because he had his offseason knee surgery already. Trey Jones, I think, was a little banged up for this game. And then up front, I mean, just, and oh, by the way, you're having Danny Collins call his first ever
meaningful
game. So not only were you really depleted in the secondary, you were really depleted at linebacker, which meant Tyler Stolsky got the start. You got to see a little bit more Joey Gerlach at strong side instead of Ryan Selig, but they were banged up. It didn't start well. It didn't really particularly end well defensively, but there was a middle, I think, 7-8 drive stretch there, Luke, where they had that thing moving, where it was Bowling Green had run 36 offensive plays, I believe, and had 76 yards. And they had 3 points in that only because of the interception that they don't allow a single yard on at the end of the day. So it's tough to kind of get a true grasp of things, but I think the one thing everybody will remember from this game, including myself, where were you for the jaw joiner just destroys everyone game?
Yeah, very, very true. To your point, Ryan, where you said, you know, at the beginning wasn't very good. At one point at play number 10, their expected points added for Bowling Green was a +8.44. And then as the game went on, at play 35, it was -10.25. And then at play, let me see here, 39, it was at like -9.75. So there was a pretty significant stretch where it just went down a cliff and then stayed down for a good period of time. And then it ramped back up because eventually they ended pretty close. They had a positive. It was in their 60 plays, they're +3.08. But in general, you're right. They did a really good job in the middle stretch there of holding Bowling Green down. And that really is what won them the game.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of start and end where Justin Wally didn't have the best game. I mean, he gets beat early, long touchdown. They kind of picked on him most of the game where he was targeted 11 times and he allowed 7 receptions. So not the greatest of days for Wally, but everybody has a bad day once in a while. But I think you saw flashes from guys like Coleman Bryson and Kerry Brown. It was nice to obviously have Cody Lindenberg back, who is the PFF highest graded player on defense for Minnesota that day. But I think it starts and ends with Jod Joyner. 13 pressures, 9 hurries, 2 sacks. I still don't know what he has to do to draw a holding call. But I think the other play that I didn't really understand from this game, especially now that I've had hindsight to watch it back, Do you remember where Minnesota strips the ball? It was in the middle stage of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually come up with it, yet Bowling Green retained possession.
Yes, I do recall this play. Very curious.
No idea what's going on. No. And I still don't know why that wasn't Minnesota ball or why it wasn't challengeable or what the deal was. But, I mean, Minnesota should have had a turnover there. But I think the funny part, just if we're just going to keep transitioning throughout this game, is I've never heard a coach be so Minnesota passive aggressive in terms of the way Scott Loeffler was, the Bowling Green head coach.
You mean the part where he said they couldn't even throw the ball from me to you, but we couldn't beat them?
Correct. And it was like, yeah, that you Minnesota was struggling to throw the football, yet, and you knew the run was coming, yet here we are, Scott. You allowed 30 points, and he's the offensive genius.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were a couple of things where Minnesota threw in some wrinkles, and they certainly got aggressive at times, but I think the thing everybody wants to talk about, though, Luke.
Oh, I know. It's coming. We're going to spend a good amount of time on this.
They actually had two good returns, which I didn't know was legal, in the final game of the Rob Wenger era. I was live tweeting the game like I always do on the Twitter machine. And to watch them have Lameke Brockington break one and then Quentin Redding gets a 27-yard return, I'm thinking to myself, where in the F has this been all year? Because coming into this game, they were minus 71 in the kick return game when their primary returner had taken it out. And then they finally were able to break one. I mean, I think special teams, I think Mark Crawford had a pretty solid day.
Yeah.
A 43 average. Didn't have any punt returns, I don't believe. But it's, I don't know if it's apropos that in the final game of Rob Wenger, they actually get a return game going. I mean, what should I think about that, Luke? I'll pass that one to you.
I in general thought that they had one of their better outings. You still look at this, like, statistically speaking, you know, they started on their own 35, which wasn't bad. That was their average start position. And then if you look at their total EPA, it was still negative. That's not bad per se, but it wasn't like amazing. It was, I think, just competent, Ryan, and that felt a lot better. It didn't hurt them in this specific game. It's hard to know what to conclude in this situation. I feel like PJ's teams tend to be more aggressive and take more risk in bowl games in general. They definitely throw in wrinkles. You'll remember the failed 2-point conversion attempt, Ryan. I can't remember. Was that a fumbled snap? I don't think so. I think it was intentional design for Dragan. And then he
intentional
tried,
design on the first PAT.
Yeah, and he tried to hop. I actually think he maybe got in, but they never. I don't know if they reviewed it.
They didn't. I think they did, and then again, my memory from about 3 weeks ago isn't as good as it normally would be the day after, but I do believe they reviewed it and concluded he did not get
it. I just don't think they had good visual evidence, but I think if they would have had a better camera angle, they might have actually concluded he was in. It was a very good effort from Dragan. You know, one, the leap, and then two, the stretch, right? I thought that was all in all pretty good. In general, I think the conclusion that we can draw with Gopher special teams, obviously, returns were a struggle. Defending kicks was a struggle, but kicking was not a struggle this year.
No, I mean, Dragan was obviously really good, and Mark Crawford
better.
Got better as the year went on.
Yep,
and I think he finished fifth in the Big Ten in punt net average, which I'll take that 100 out of 100 times.
Yep.
Considering, I think, three of the last four seasons they had finished well below average in the Big Ten in that regard. So kicking game wasn't an issue. It's just getting a competent return, which I think I'm almost under the impression now of never return a kickoff, just fair catch everything, which I don't know that we'll get to the new special teams coordinator who's very aggressive in the return game, but they need to figure it out at punt return, whether that is with Quentin Redding, whether that is with All-American Bowl MVP Coy Parrish, whether that's with Kristen Hoskins, whether they have to figure it out, because the amount of times they've gone punt safe or their blocking has just been atrocious or the returner just can't break a tackle, the punt return game has to become more of a weapon. Mm-hmm. Kick return, I swear, I'm going to tell everybody this for the next 10 months. Just fair catch every kickoff because it's not worth it, and I've seen how much it's not worth it. You've heard me ramble about how it's not worth it. and then try to figure out a way to scheme up some punt returns like Iowa always does.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you on the kick return, just fair catch it. I just think that the block, like one of the issues, if you're at a game, just like they could never get any blocks. It was like the guys are getting free runs down the field, and that was both punt and kick return. That's the thing. If they can clean that up, I'm good with trying to return a few. And then you just can't make turnovers like Sean Tyler had a couple different times on kick return. Ultimately, I'm for returning kicks. As long as you feel like you can execute it well. The execution has to be there without a question.
Yeah, death taxes and Minnesota ending up winning their bowl game. What are they now, 5-0 under Fleck in bowl games?
I don't know if they've lost a bowl under him.
They have. They certainly have not. I know that for a fact. I believe they're now 5-0 under Fleck in bowl games. You know, so to get these guys going, even if it is everybody's favorite Christmas in Detroit, which is obviously one of my favorite. Every 3 years, that's where the Gophers go. So if you want to start making your plans for 2026 now, it could be a pretty good idea for you, Luke.
All right. Let's get a quick break in, and then we'll talk a little bit about non-bowl game related stuff. If you want to make an impact on Gophers NIL, you can do that by becoming a member of Dinkytown Athletes, or you could just like sell your house, Ryan, and work with Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group, and that's going to be a big impact on Gopher athletics.
100%. So if you're looking for someone that can help you sell your house, let me direct you to TeamDinkytown.com. They've sold a couple of houses already, 25,000 plus over asking both times, multiple offers. We've got a third one coming on the market here soon, and 1% of the purchase price goes to Dinkytown Athletes. With both sales, Luke, that's over $4,000. So what can you do to find them today? Go to teamdinkytown.com, or you can give them a call at 612-250-8562.
Okay, now we're kind of in off-season stuff. We'll touch a little bit on some kind of the more time-relevant off-season things, Ryan. We'll do some off-season stuff eventually. I don't know when we'll do it and what cadence we'll do it. We're not going to set expectations for people and then under-deliver, right? So we'll try and figure out some topics. Obviously, I mean, spring is just around the corner. You know, from a climate perspective, it might be this week. From a calendar perspective, when does spring practice probably start?
It's mid-March, late March usually. Today, as we record this, it is January 16th to date the episode. And why I do that is because today is the first day of the spring semester at the University of Minnesota. Oh,
that's a good reminder. Yeah.
All of the transfers and early enrollees lock themselves in.
Yep. Yeah, so let's go there. Let's talk some of the transfer portal stuff. Obviously, I had a number of guys move on. We probably won't focus on them all that much, but talk more about some of the guys that came in. If you want to touch on a few guys that moved on, I'm fine with that. I will say, if you're not a Gopher Illustrated member, there is a really good page, I'm assuming it's behind the paywall, Ryan, that summarizes both the defections and those that are coming in via the portal. So in this new day and age, if that's something you want to follow, you better make sure you're a Gopher Illustrated member, because they have that down to a single web page.
They do. I mean, if you want to go to gopherillustrated.com, you hover over the football recruiting tab, and on the bottom right, it says transfer portal. You can see all this, but that's where I'll just touch on briefly some of these deflections. Minnesota only has 7 scholarship players at the portal, but I was told on social media, in my emails and from messages, that this is the end of the world and Fleck doesn't know what he's doing. So that 7 transfer departures is among the least in Power 5, or I guess now it is officially, Luke, Power 4.
Yeah, well, it's probably Power 2, but
Sure, but I got to get used to saying now it's only Power 4. Boy.
It's still a sad day over here. We don't need to get into it too much. I am going to miss the Pac-12 immensely.
Yeah, so you're still just beside yourself because your Washington Huskies team has gone. You've gone from an elated Washington fan to now everything is doom and gloom, but
please,
that's a different podcast.
Please don't. Yeah, that's a different podcast.
So Minnesota saw a couple of quarterbacks leave. Ethan Calliope-McManus is going to where else but Minnesota East. and he's going to Rutgers.
Can we quick? I do want to focus on this a little bit. You know, I don't know what happened. You probably have a much better idea. But if the idea is that you're concerned, I'm speculating here. You and I haven't talked about this. But if your concern was, hey, they're going to bring in a transfer to compete with me, you're going to go to Rutgers where you're going to compete with basically arguably your clone that's just a little bit bigger in terms of like completion percentage. I guess you can beat him out there, but you're going to have to compete. I assume Gavin Wimsett hasn't been promised the job, but you're not going to, I can't imagine you got promised the starting job either. I think that's an interesting transfer from him.
I'll tell you this much. I'm very interested to see in that early November game where Minnesota travels to Piscataway, who is the quarterback. You've also taking a position coach from Rutgers. So that trade continues. Essentially, it was Ethan Kaliak-Manis and Dino is a preferred walk-on for Corey Heatherman, which we'll get to. But so Ethan's going to Rutgers. It doesn't surprise me. I think I said back at the time about a month ago that I know everybody thought he wasn't even a Division III quarterback. Yeah, he's going to the Power Four.
He's really talented. There's no question. I think
it's just consistency, and I'll continue to say that. Maybe it looks better with Kirk Shiraka now calling the plays since he recruited him. Yada yada yada. I'm skeptical that number one, he potentially wins the job, and even if he does win the job, that it looks exponentially better. Now maybe he is that much better in an RPO system compared to what it was here. But I think it was the best thing for both sides to get a clean break. So with Ethan gone, QB2 Cole Kramer is now getting married here very soon. If you've never heard that before, I don't know what you were doing over the last 2 months. And then quarterback 3 and Drew Vioto, the true freshman, ended up hitting the portal. He's going back to Eastern Michigan, where Minnesota flipped him from. You've also got a couple of scholarship running backs. Zach Evans, I think everybody will remember him winning Big Ten Freshman of the Week back in September.
Yeah.
He's going to North Texas. So he's from Texas, transferring to North Texas. I'm going to assume he gets a shot to be the guy there. Not incredibly sure how that one makes sense in my head. Marquise Williams, someone who redshirted this past year, scholarship running back. He's going to Akron. Dino, Ethan's brother, is going as a preferred walk-on to Rutgers. So they get to stay together. You also have an offensive lineman by the name of Tyrell Lawrence. Didn't play. Scholarship guy is going to Alabama A&M. And I think the last guy is J.J. Gaudet, someone – it's been a long journey for him. I remember going to a Chicago Nike camp and talking with him and his parents back at the time when he was committed to Minnesota. It was almost 6-7 years ago now. He's going to Illinois State, Illinois native. That makes sense. So
did you miss Max Grant?
Guys now that Minnesota is going to be relying on in 2024, I think you got to start with the highly touted kid, Max Brosmer, Luke.
Yeah. So Max Brosmer comes in as a 4-star, Ryan, because now you guys rank the transfers as well. This is a really, really talented kid out of New Hampshire. This is the FCS level. I mean, I don't know. I'm excited. I got to hear his quarterback coach say, you know, he's got the potential to have a pro career. I don't know about that. But in general, like, you got to be excited just looking at some of the gaudy numbers that he put up.
100%. I mean, he threw for over 8,000 yards in the FCS. He was up for the FCS Heisman last week down in Dallas. Didn't end up winning it. Was it Dallas or Frisco? I know it was Texas. Either way. Yeah,
doesn't matter.
Started 31 career games, 69 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. And just this past season in 2023, he led all FCS quarterbacks in passing yards, first downs, and passing attempts. So it's going to be now on Greg Harbaugh to prove that it wasn't him and that it was his former quarterback, that's why the passing offense didn't work.
Sure.
Because Brosmer has proven at the FCS level that he can do it now. There's obviously a jump from the FCS and New Hampshire University, peace and love to them, to the Big Ten, and where you're going to be going against teams like USC, Michigan, Penn State this next year. But on paper, Luke, I'll tell you, it looks awfully good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like they had a plan. They identified a target, got him in early, convinced him of, you know, what they wanted. And when I say they had a plan, it was like they're going to bring in someone to compete on the transfer level. And they seemingly got a good one. And obviously he's now got the opportunity where it's like, hey, you're going to be the starter. And so now he's just got to run with it. The one thing, you know, everything that I've read or heard about him is he seems to be a really smart quarterback. And sometimes, you know, all the physical intangibles can only get you so far. But if you can read defenses, you know, pre-snap, post-snap, and then execute, and maybe you're not as physically skilled, that can take you a long way. And I'm excited to see him operate as a quarterback.
100%. And so you'll be able to see him in spring ball. Now, quarterback two for spring ball is going to be a little interesting, considering Minnesota had a quarterback from Fresno State by the name of Logan Fife. But because of that court ruling, Luke, yeah. Are you familiar with this court ruling that came down, I think, about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics, but basically you can just transfer.
Wherever. It doesn't matter if you've already locked in with another one and you're eligible. I don't pretend to know the nuances of it.
I don't either.
But that's where Logan Fife had committed. He'd come to the bowl game, which locked in his student-athlete status, and then about the last day of the portal where it was open for Minnesota to host transfers, he ended up saying, yeah, I'm going to renege on this, and now he's going to Montana. Montana, a very good team.
Yes.
They just lost their starting quarterback to the portal. So after being explicit with him and telling him from day one, this is Logan Fife, mm-hmm. that you're going to be the number two, but you're an ankle turner away.
Mm-hmm.
He just decides at the last moment, yeah, no thanks. So it doesn't give Minnesota any time. And now you're going to have a quarterback two in the spring of either Drake Lindsey, the true freshman from Arkansas, or everybody's favorite cult hero, Max Shikanjanski from Stillwater, the redshirt walk-on. So I do anticipate them adding another transfer scholarship quarterback in the spring period. And there will be plenty of opportunity for everybody to hem and haw about it then, but it's going to be a little bit.
Can I add one comment just on Logan Fife in general? I can understand that people are probably frustrated and they're probably like, oh, where's the loyalty? But honestly, I'm all for this for him, right? I don't know the story or the backstory or what happened here, but if he made a decision that, you know what, I really want a chance to be a starter and this wasn't probably going to be it, and there was an opportunity to go to Montana or wherever it was and it's a better fit for him, I'm always for the better fit for the player. I think this is a great opportunity for him. We see this in college basketball way more than we've seen in football, and we're starting to see this in football. And I think this is what's going to bring parity, continue to bring parity. You're going to have limited depth, but you're going to continue to see more parity, and I love that for college football personally.
Yeah, I get your point. I would also say just on the Minnesota side of things, horrible timing because now you don't have any chance to be able to get somebody applied, accepted, yada, yada, in for the spring semester, which just started today. So,
I mean, I
totally be a little interesting at quarterback.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I get that that's frustrating, but ultimately I want what's best for the individual. And that's the perspective I'm taking it from the Minnesota perspective, really frustrating.
Yeah. So at running back, they're going to be attempting to make sure that if they do get down to running back 4 and 5 next year, it's going to look a lot different. And that's where they brought in a couple of experienced transfer running backs. The first one I'll talk about is from Ohio, C.A. Bangura. I should have had you try and pronounce that because you would have never had a shot.
Let me look at
the amount of tweets I got or people just telling me in person. I can't wait to hear Luke try and pronounce some of these names.
I don't even see it on the list. Did I miss it?
I don't know what list you're looking at.
I'm looking. So it's so bad that I couldn't even identify it. I had to look for the Ohio. Oh, I would have said Sai Bangura. I think I would have gotten Bangura, but I never would have gotten CA.
It is enunciated CA, as in literally the letter C and the letter A. CA Bangura, someone that has run for nearly 2,000 rushing yards in the MAC the last few seasons, 25 total touchdowns. And maybe the only thing Gopher fans care about at this stage in time when I'm talking about MAC transfer running backs. Luke, do you want to take a guess how many career fumbles C.A. Bangura has?
One. Two.
Is that the one you're going to stick with?
I'm going to stick with one.
Drum roll, please.
Okay, drum roll.
He has a total of 4 career fumbles on 412 carries. That
Not
is
bad.
1% for 25 carries, or excuse me, 100-something carries. So unless they have the worst run out of all time for the second straight season, Bangura is someone that at 6'195" can certainly help them. They also brought in a young man from Oklahoma, one of Luke's favorite Big 12 institutions, now SEC, Marcus Major, a former four-star prospect in the 2019 season. He has appeared in 35 games for Oklahoma over the last 5 years. The only reason he's able to come here, because of that COVID season. So
nice.
6'220". He's got 194 carries. Luke, I'm going to ask you once again, how many career fumbles do you think Marcus Major has on 194 career carries?
I'm going to go with 1%, so one. I wish you would have given me the 400 carries before.
I should have. Again, that's my bad.
It's okay.
One career fumble, and he has double-digit carries in each of the last 5 seasons for Oklahoma. 6'220", has 1 year to play. So you're looking at a likely running back room in 2024. Darius Taylor, something like C.A. Bangura, Marcus Major. You've also got Jordan Newbin there. They've got a couple of early enrollee running backs at the high school level, Jaden Wright and Femi Ijeboy. So they're all in on trying to make sure they got some better depth there. At receiver, Luke, they brought in a couple receivers, including the son of one of your favorite Packer players, Luke. Do you know who that is?
So I'm looking at the list, and I only recognize one last name that probably could be a Packer player that I recognize, and that's Driver, which would be probably Donald Driver, and this would be Christian Driver from Penn State.
Correct. That Donald Driver's kid is now a Golden Gopher, someone that former four-star kid coming out of high school, was a safety early on at Penn State. They moved him to receiver during this past season. He played primarily on special teams, elected to put his name into the portal, and now he'll have 3 years here to play at Minnesota. So Donald Driver's kid, former four-star, I get it. I mean, if you're going to be trading Dino Calley-McManus for Christian Driver, I think you're going to take that trade 100 out of 100 times if you're a Gopher fan. They also brought in a Division II standout from one of Luke's favorite universities in Emporia State, Jalen Varner, a former walk-on at Missouri who is a cornerback, transfers to Emporia to receiver, and he was first-team all-conference this past season after a 90-reception season, double-digit touchdowns, over 1,000 yards. Had a bunch of Group of Five offers, but Minnesota ended up deciding that they wanted to go on him in that early part of January. So you get some depth to go behind guys like Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, and Lemeke Brockington, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, we know that we have a number of guys that that have played well, and I think at this point you're trying to build that depth, like you said, but more importantly, see if you can get someone to push them and maybe take a position from them. Curious to see how this will play out in the spring.
And then finally, we'll talk about a couple of defensive backs, one from Bucknell by the name of Ethan Robinson, someone that had gaudy offers coming out of the transfer portal, someone that Minnesota legitimately beat schools like USC, Arkansas. I mean, he had plenty of opportunities because he was first-team All-Patriot League in 2023. He's been really good, and you've seen Minnesota use that this kind of position, I would say, with Ethan Robinson. He's got 1 year left to play. Who does that remind you of? Trey Jones.
Yeah.
That's what they did at that other corner spot alongside Justin Wally last year. With Trey Jones graduating, they wanted to do that again if they could. And that's where they get a guy like Ethan Robinson being able to come in. Really good coverage corner. We're going to see how it translates. And then they also brought in more of a coverage guy slash special teamer by the name of Jayonte McMillan from TCU. Another former walk-on, played in every single game for TCU the last couple of seasons. When he did play on defense for them, someone that was primarily in coverage, but a really good special teamer. So it's tough to kind of grade any of this, obviously, considering you don't know how it's always going to translate. But they obviously had some holes, especially on offense, quarterback, running back, receiver. And when you don't have NIL to use in the transfer portal, this is type of, because I'm looking at some of these, I'm looking at the transfer rankings, Luke. It's like the top 10. It's like Ole Miss, USC, Texas A&M, Florida State, Oregon. What do they all have, Luke?
Money, apparently.
I, okay, we're not going to play the game of Luke's been hiding under the NIL rock when you literally do NIL interviews for Dinky Town Athlete. We're not playing this game. I have no time for that.
So they allegedly have what I would...
It's not even allegedly,
Luke. I would call it inducement money is what they have.
I mean, it's the same way. I think I saw this on Twitter. Nebraska's technically at like 100 scholarships. Or scholarship players, and obviously there's only 85 spots. How are they able to do that? Because the NIL collective is picking up like 10, 15 of these. I mean, it's insane, some of these schools. But that is the latest and greatest in the transfer portal. Yeah, there were decommitments. I don't have the time and energy to walk everybody through those right now. But now that the semester has started, now that I know these guys have literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally moved into the campus at the University of Minnesota, we're going to count them.
What I find interesting in your rankings, though, is, like, at least on 247, is I think it only accounts for transfers in versus the transfers out, right? Because I would imagine that there's actually some sort of difference there that needs to be accounted for. So what Minnesota did a good job of was they didn't lose a lot of guys, right?
Well, you look at it, and there's only got one kid going Power 5 on scholarship, and that's Ethan.
Yeah.
The other transfers are either dropping down at the Group of 5 level, the FCS level. So not only did maybe they weren't Power 5 players at the end of the day, some of these guys, and you're able to upgrade your roster that way and be more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think what I'm trying to get at is, like, there's probably two kinds of strategies here, right? And the first strategy is just, like, you know, amass talent and bring people in. But the other strategy is going to be to retain players too. And I don't know that, and I think you can kind of do a hybrid of both probably in there too. But I would assume with the way that Minnesota and Dinky Town Athletes have structured things, their goal is to, you know, is to retain players. And I think they've now done a pretty good job of that, Ryan, in the last 2 years. I know there's another window and a lot can still change, but I think in the last 2 years, they've done a pretty good job of keeping a lot of those players that you would think were kind of the top starters or those that are playing, you know, significant minutes.
Well, Fleck talked about it in his post-signing day press conference. And I think it's true with the way that Minnesota views NIL. And what he said, paraphrasing, was this. Imagine three buckets on the ground. There's three different buckets for NIL. First one, retaining your own players, which Minnesota has filled that bucket because of the fans, because of the match campaign in December, which is very successful, because Luke Buehr has single-handedly bought enough bacon to feed nine different Montessoris.
Do you want some? I'll drop some off when I go pick up my kids after this. That sound good?
I'm not a big bacon guy, to be honest.
You want brisket bacon or pork bacon?
Overrated thing, and I know I'm going to get tweets. I'm going to get text messages once people hear it. Bacon's fine. I don't think.
Well, you got to try it. I already have
some bacon, but I appreciate it.
Okay.
But when you think of the three buckets, it's retaining players, which Minnesota and their fans have done a really good job in terms of filling that bucket with NIL here in the last year. And then you get to start to use it into recruiting. And that's where it's the high school recruiting bucket and the transfer recruiting bucket. Now, trust me, I've heard Fleck say some things publicly about, I think when he was talking about Max Brosmer, yeah, we had some donors step up. I will say this. If NIL was the number one thing for Max Brosmer, he would not be here. 100% would not be here. He would be at a few other places. I'd say them, but then they'd I'm getting all worked up because of the whole Cole Kramer 30,000 thing being ripped off the website. It was never true to begin with, so people get clicks, and I'm getting all worked up. And I promised myself I wouldn't do that on this podcast. So what I'm trying to come around to on this is I've taken way too many places off the path here. There's three buckets. You've done a great job of filling the first bucket, which in my opinion is the most important one, retaining your own players that you want to retain. Minnesota's never really going to be the highest bidder for any of these guys, but all I can hear is maybe hypothetically, Luke, a co-host on this podcast at one point in time, in my ear hypothetically saying you don't always have to be the highest. You just have to be in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And because of the way that NIL has grown here through Dinky Town Athletes, they have done that. And fans should be congratulated for that. But there's still a very long way to go. Because I look at Minnesota's rival schools, I look at, I've already talked about Nebraska as well. There is a long way to go to catch schools like that. But the job that fans have done here in the last 12 months should be commended, Luke.
Yeah, it, definitely. And I think there's a lot of truth to that statement where, you know, you don't make a decision usually on one factor, right? So yes, are there people that are going to make a decision solely on NIL? Yes. Are there people that are going to take NIL into consideration relative to facilities and majors and the geographic location and the opportunities post graduation? Yes, absolutely. I think all of those can be factored in. You just have to be at the table, right? And I think at this point, Minnesota is at the table. They're probably not at the table for the NIL onlys, and that's okay. Like maybe that's not what they want. Right. It will be interesting to see. But yes, there's opportunity to grow, Ryan. They're doing that through the Thousand Hills Bacon campaign. We're going to be able to show something there. There's Gray Duck has found a path to be able to get $1 million donated to Dinkytown Athletes if they can grow their market share. So if you ask yourself, like, well, I don't know if I want to be a member. Okay, but we're giving you multiple avenues, and then not me, right? Dinkytown Athletes is giving you multiple avenues. They're even giving your competitors that are Wisconsin fans multiple avenues to contribute to Dinkytown Athletes by like buying Gray Duck vodka or buying Duck Duck beer, right? I have friends that I play fantasy football with. I'm getting pictures now. I'm doing my part. And these aren't big Gopher fans, Ryan. They're just buying Gray Duck vodka or they're buying Duck Duck beer. Like those are ways. And if we can take a market share away from Tito's, right? We've talked about this before. There's a path to $1 million, which is meaningful money to Dinkytown Athletes to support football and all of the other athletics at the University of Minnesota. So it's going to take a group effort and continued group effort. But I think that the economics are there, the population is there, that we can do it in a really meaningful and sustainable way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Trust me. I'm just tired of the woe is me from this Minnesota sports fan base. Trust me.
Oh, dude,
I'm a 1992 baby. I have never seen in my lifetime a men's sports team win something.
Yeah.
I have never seen it. I grew up in my entire life. I cover sports for a freaking living. I watch all the sports and I've never seen it. I'm just tired of woe is me. The Gophers can never do it. I can't help. I don't have money. I'm waiting on the white whale to come in and save us, Ryan. To your point, Luke, if you're already a vodka connoisseur, stop buying Tito's or whatever your vodka of choice may be and just buy Gray Duck. Or if you're going to buy a light beer instead of buying Coors or Bud or whatever it may be, buy Duck Duck beer. I mean, it's not that hard, people, to just make these little changes. Because trust me when I say they add up, you and I know that better than anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I am going to call you out, though. You have seen a championship by men. It was the Gophers 2003 Men's Hockey National Championship. You were alive for that. You're pretty young still, but you were there.
I will say men's professional sports team.
Okay, professional sports.
A little bit better inside.
Fair enough. We could start an entire podcast, Ryan, just on the like disposition of Minnesota sports fans, especially the more like passive ones, and how, yeah, well, let's not get into it, but the disposition is wild to me. Let's talk a little bit about now just the new coaches that were brought in. Obviously,
before we get there, okay. I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on Coy Parrish.
Oh yeah, you should.
Because all he did was go down to the All-American Bowl and end up winning the MVP. Now, Minnesota had four of their signees be selected for the bowl game, two of them offensive linemen, Brett Carroll and Nathan Roy, a defensive lineman from Kindred, North Dakota, and Riley Sunrum, and then obviously Coy Parrish from ESCO. Now, Nathan Roy did not make the trip down to Texas. He's recovering from an offseason injury. He's now enrolled here at the University of Minnesota, and he gets to go with the university doctors. But Carroll was down in there. Riley Sunrum was down there, and obviously Coy Parrish. I heard pretty good things about all three from the analysts that were down there, but I'll say this. How do I want to phrase this with Coy Parrish? The Cooper DeJean comparisons are not going to be going away, because Cooper DeJean was someone that obviously many fans know well listening to this podcast, But he went down to the All-American Bowl as well, and he ended up, by the end of the week, proving himself as a small-town guy. I can tell you early in the week, Coy Parrish going from playing Moose Lake or Duluth Denfeld instead of Denfield because I'm a moron. It's Duluth Denfeld, Luke, from the Parent of Spare podcast where I screwed that up, and then I got about 10 emails saying, Ryan, you misenunciated it. Please do your research.
Pull the Luke Buer.
Duluth Denfeld. Going from playing them to 4- and 5-star athletes from around the country, a little bit of an adjustment from the kid from Esco in those first couple of days, but he obviously figured it out. Ends up winning the All-American Bowl MVP with a diving interception. He blocks a punt. I think he had a tackle for loss. He was really good. And I don't know the answer to everybody's question of how high is Coy Parrish going to move up now? Is he a 5-star, Ryan? How high is he going to move up? Those questions are beyond my pay grade. I don't have enough input in those final decisions, so we'll have to wait and see. I think there's a lot of deliberations going on because of how impressive he was. But it was cool to see, as I'm watching it on NBC, the kid from Esco going against some of the best in the country ends up winning the MVP. He'll be on campus in June, and we'll see if he can't win some kind of a job here starting in fall camp.
You know, he could be the argument for why you need to return punts, Ryan, and kicks, you know.
What are you, Chip Scoggins? Now Mr. National Minnesota
I don't know.
Writer of the Year?
Yeah, I don't know that he needs to do that, but I imagine that it's very possible that he'll see some early playing time. He's not enrolled
early. He had
early,
9 right? return touchdowns for
That's
Esco.
Wild. That's and, wild.
I mean, I just think he's the safety version potentially of Cooper DeJean. Now, Cooper DeJean ended up going really well. He's going to be a first-round draft pick for somebody at corner. I don't want to put those lofty expectations that for Coy Parrish, the only path for success to him here is for him to have a Cooper DeJean type of career. But he's obviously a very gifted player, and that's where it's going to be really fun to watch Coy Parrish here at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's cool that they were able to keep him as some of the bigger schools came in, you know, towards the end trying to make their push and retain him. Obviously, Danny Collins, who called the bowl game at defensive coordinator, played a big role. But there is a new defensive coordinator now, Ryan. Introduce us to another defection from Minnesota East to Minnesota.
Yeah, your guy from Rutgers, the number 2 in command there, Corey Heatherman.
Did I tell you that my coworker that's a big Rutgers guy was like, all I got, didn't even know that we had a defensive coordinator yet. He goes, man, you guys got a good one. And I'm like, what does that mean? And then he told me, and he's a big Corey Heatherman guy.
Yeah, I mean, after doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of Corey Heatherman interviews, I have myself become a big Corey Heatherman guy. I think the easiest way to kind of summarize Corey Heatherman's career is it's been a long journey for him. And what I mean by that is he used to be a college quarterback back at Fitchburg State, ends up going to Europe and playing in, I don't know if it was NFL Europe or whatever it was, but he ends up playing in Europe, and he actually also ends up being the offensive coordinator and the quarterback at the same time.
Amazing.
Can't make it up. They had a staff change midway through his first year out there. He ends up having to scheme, call plays, and oh, by the way, it's in Germany, and he doesn't know a lot of German, so he can't make checks. So then he comes back to the States, decides he wants to become a coach. And I think I would say it really starts to take off for him in 2015. What happens in 2015? He goes from Pace University, where he was the defensive coordinator, to Maine. Why does that sound familiar? Because that's where he meets up with Luke's favorite defensive coordinator at the University of Rutgers, Joe Harris-Hemiak.
Yep.
So in 2015, he's the D-line coach. And then Harris-Hemiak gets elevated from defensive coordinator to head coach. What does he do? He elevates Corey Heatherman to run his defense for the next 3 years. They have a lot of success there. And then once Harris-Hemiak got the job here at Minnesota in 2019, Heatherman goes to James Madison, one of the best. I mean, James Madison has had an incredible run. They're now obviously an FBS team. So he runs the defense for them in 2019, 2020, and 2021. And they are really, really good during that stretch. In 2020, he is an AFCA 35 under 35 selection. Minnesota now has three of those on their defensive staff, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they have Heatherman, who is a 2020 selection to that. They have Danny Collins, who is a 2022 selection. And now they have Winston Delaide-Boudere, who is a 2023 selection. So essentially 35 under 35 highlights some of the best young coaches around the country. And now they have three on Minnesota's defensive staff. So what happens in 2022? Well, I guess I would also be remiss if I just said, after that 2021 season where the Dukes are one of the best defenses in all of FCS, Heatherman is named the FCS Assistant Coach of the Year by the AFCA, a.k.a. the American Football Coaches Association, for everything he did for them. So how does it go from there? Well, then he is hired by Joe Harris-Simiak. When Joe Harris-Simiak goes back to Rutgers to run the defense, he becomes the linebackers coach for the last couple of years. So he has called games. He runs the exact same system, more or less,
mm-hmm.
of what Minnesota's got the personnel to run in terms of a four-down front. And he's had a lot of success at places like Maine and James Madison, which historically aren't defensive juggernauts. So it's going to be now with Heatherman here, how does he gel with the rest of the staff? Because Minnesota retains all of their defensive staff, not named Joe Rossi. So you still have Winston. You still have Nick Monroe, Danny Collins. And it's trying to figure out now what the best culmination, I guess I would say, to get this defense humming back to like they were in 2021, 2022.
Yeah, I think from like a from a growth standpoint for the defense, it's a nice insertion, not going to have to learn a lot of new stuff, right? We know they've got some players. It's just about getting them to gel and play well. We know Rossi thought highly of the defense and what they had coming. I think this is a really seemingly good hire from that standpoint. And, you know, conversely, where I was like, I don't know about Rossi, given the history, it's a total difference here. If you look at what he was able to do at James Madison and, like, you know, even at Maine, where he's been before, where he's had this job, he's had success. I hope this isn't an inverse curse by me saying that I like this hire.
Yeah, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
I did ask our Rutgers guy, Bobby Darin, about what did he think of Heatherman. He's covered him the last couple of seasons, and here was his quote to me. Heatherman was an integral part of the coaching staff who was well-respected by players and coaches. There were even rumors that he was in line to be the next defensive coordinator if Harris-Simiak had accepted a head coaching position elsewhere. Shiano spoke highly of Heatherman, and it went beyond coach speak. He's considered a rising star in the profession, did a really good job recruiting at Rutgers. He's a player's coach, and within his position group, a.k.a. the linebackers, they thought really highly of him, and the Rutgers linebacker play enjoyed a pattern of progress. Hmm. I like that. I've never heard that one before. A pattern of progress under his direction, and he proved to be one of the strongest position groups on the entire team. So, glowing recommendation there. We'll find out again. 39 years old, 35 under 35 selection, AFCA, FCS Assistant of the Year just a couple years ago with James Madison. And from listening to him do some interviews, a lot of the things he talks about, I felt like I was listening to Joe Rossi. So sure. I can understand why Fleck went this route. There's only so many trees Fleck knows, and that's where the Greg Schiano tree is one he knows very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
With Kirk Ciarrocca and Joe Harris-Simiak at Rutgers, as I mentioned earlier, he essentially just completed the trade of Ethan Kaliak-Manis for Corey Heatherman. So we'll see which side ends up getting the best out of him.
All right, let's talk about some special teams coordinator. And what we got here, we got a real vet.
I'd love for you to try and enunciate this first name and last.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. It just feels like really unfair that you would do that to me in general. But so special teams coordinator, I think I get the first name, Bob.
Good job.
Thank you. I'm going to go Ligashevsky.
You got it. Ligashevsky.
All right. Nice. Love it.
He's been coaching football longer than I've been alive. He's been coaching football for 39 years.
Same
and
here.
That includes about 15 years in the NFL. So, and about, I'd say 80, 90% of it's been on special teams. So I would like to think Ligashevsky knows what he's doing. Where did he and PJ Fleck cross paths, Luke? I'm glad you asked. They were both on the 2012 coaching staff at Tampa Bay with Schiano. Sure. So there's your little connection there of how in the world does Minnesota hire Syracuse's Bob Ligoszewski? Well, it's because Fleck knew him. So I guess the thing to note here is for the first time in PJ Fleck's tenure as a head coach, I should say. So that's 11 seasons, 4 at Western, 7 at Minnesota. He is going to have a new special teams coordinator, Rob Wanger, no longer with the program. I know a lot of people have been telling me how they can't wait for my comments on that. I always feel bad when a guy doesn't necessarily, let's say, get his contract renewed potentially, or maybe mutual split, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I know that he gave his best effort. It was just so clear to me, and I think a lot of other people, that a breath of fresh air was needed in the return game, especially maybe the block game. To your point, Luke, as you talked about earlier, Dragan Kesich and Mark Crawford, probably one of the top returning kicking duos in the Big Ten in 2024. But what Ligoszewski has done throughout his career, whether it was in the NFL or even here most recently at Syracuse, they've been really good in the return game, and they are very aggressive in the return game. In 2022, the Orange's return units were 3rd in the FBS in kickoff return average, and they like to get aggressive in punt return too. So we'll see if Fleck allows that. We'll see if maybe everything I ever said about special teams was misguided once they change here, and maybe the return game doesn't get any better. But at least you have a guy that has coached football in the NFL and at the collegiate level longer than I've been alive. So right. I'm just glad to see a breath of fresh air being infused into that special teams room.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just sometimes a different voice is maybe all that's needed. Just a fresh perspective, right? And if you're a true sicko, you can go back and watch the Minnesota loss to Bowling Green, because Ligoszewski was on the staff of Bowling Green in 2021. And he was the special teams coordinator and safeties coach there. And if you additionally want to watch the Gophers bowl game against Syracuse, he was also special teams coordinator there. So you can try and get some hot takes before the spring. But if you're a true sicko, go back and watch those games.
The last thing I would note, and I have no idea why the University of Minnesota has not announced this yet. I tweeted it out last week, in part because I've seen the signed contract from the University of Minnesota that they've literally, figuratively, spiritually, and socially sent to me. But the new tight ends coach is your favorite University of Minnesota president, Eric Kaler. Now, to make sure people understand, it is a guy by the name of Eric Kaler.
Just not Eric Kaler. Not the chemical engineering background Eric Kaler.
No, he is the senior offensive analyst from last season, someone that is now the new tight ends coach. He's got 26 years of coaching experience, including 21 as a coordinator and 2 as a head coach. He was with Miami of Ohio when they came into Huntington Bank Stadium back a few years ago. He's been an offensive coordinator and a quarterbacks coach for a long time. So I've had a lot of people say, Ryan, does this mean that finally Greg Harbaugh gets to be taken off of quarterbacks? Does this mean that? No, it just means Eric Kaler earned the respect of Fleck, earned the respect of Harbaugh and everybody else, and now he's the new tight ends coach. So, again, I have no idea why it hasn't been announced, because that signed contract is about a month old that the university themselves sent me. No idea what the holdup is there, but that is your new tight ends coach, Eric Kaler. Now, will he certainly have a hand in some things around quarterback play? I'm sure he will. But it's still going to be Harbaugh's baby.
All right. Yeah, totally makes sense. I looked a little bit more at Ligoszewski's background, too. He was also at Illinois with
Lovie.
Yeah, so you can look at some of those games.
From the Houston Texans, I believe.
Yeah, that's where they crossed paths in 2013, 2015. So, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, he's been in coaching a long time. Hopefully, we'll see some improvement, obviously, in the specialties category. I don't know, anything else you want to hit, Ryan, or can we let the good people go?
I think we can let the good people go. I mean, in terms of what's next, the coaching staff is getting to know their players. The coaching staff is going to be doing some recruiting. They just had visitors on campus yesterday. They just extended their first in-state offer to a sophomore lineman. You can read about that on Gopher Illustrated. A lot of recruiting here for the next few weeks as the coaching staff starts to figure out the 2025 class, which is the juniors to be seniors heading into 2024. And if you want to check that out, go for illustrated.com. Just $1 to join.
Again, want to thank you all for listening. Appreciate Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group again for making this possible. Have a great rest of your day, and go Gophers.